Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
Happy New Year to you. Busy on a New Year's Day here on Greeny on ESPN Radio, ESPN app. SiriusXM Channel 80, Gabe Neitzel, Braden Gall in for Greeny today. Reacting to everything that happened over the weekend in the NFL. Plus, we do have those college football playoff semifinal games coming up later today. Of course, you can listen to those right here on ESPN Radio. Beginning with the Rose Bowl, featuring Michigan, number one team in the country, taking on number four, Alabama. To help us break that one down, we welcome in John Jansen, who is a Michigan radio announcer, also the host of Stoney and Jansen from 6 to 10 a.m. on 97.1 The Ticket in Detroit. So, John, we certainly appreciate the time. How early, when your team is playing in the Rose Bowl like this, because of all the aura that surrounds the Rose Bowl, do you get to the stadium a little bit earlier today than you would for, I don't know, a regular road game at Maryland?
Sometimes it's logistics, but this is one of those opportunities because there's so much history in the Rose Bowl. Heck, I played in it in January 1 of 1998 when we won a national championship. So it's got special meaning for me. And so I'm going to be pulling up in about 5 minutes. I know the team is going to be here soon. Fans are already here. It's an unbelievable environment. So blessed to be able to have the opportunity to be here and celebrate college football and celebrate the college football playoffs.
Hey, John, you mentioned the 97 championship and finishing the deal. And I think so much of the matchup today, like if I look at it on paper, most of the individual matchups favor Alabama. But this Michigan team has been by far the most dominant in all of college football for the entire year. But there's 3 years of experience now on this roster that's been building to this moment. On top of, as you've alluded to, the one national championship in 97, but like none since like the 50s. So you have 70 years of like pent-up frustration. Can you try to quantify what that asset is inside of a locker room? We've seen teams use it before to break through and beat teams that are quote-unquote better. How can you tell? How did you guys know in 97 that you had what it took?
Well, because we were just a better team. You can have individual matchups and they look at it and say, well, you know what? Hey, Alabama's edge rushers, Braswell and Dallas Turner, they're better than Michigan's tackles. But then you look and you say, well, is the scheme better for Michigan? Does this offensive line play as a unit paired with tight ends, running backs, a scheme? And, you know, when you look at it in terms of what does the team bring to the table versus just individuals, yeah, you got to be able to win individual matchups. And a lot of times it's what it'll come down to some of those. But then you look and you say, offense, defense, special teams. How do they play as 11 on the field? And how do they play if one of those components, and let's just say on offense it's Blake Corum, if he goes down, you insert Donovan Edwards. Or Zach Zinter, he goes down, you insert Carson Barnhart and Trent Jones at tackle. So you've got a lot of interchangeable parts for Michigan, and that's the way it was in 97 for us. We were just a better team, maybe not as talented as some others, but we played well together.
John Jansen, Michigan radio announcer and host of Stoney and Jansen on 97.1 The Ticket in Detroit, joining us here on Greeny, ESPN Radio, ESPN up. Gabe Neitzel, Braden Gall in for Greeny today. I feel like the narrative around J.J. McCarthy has just been all over the place. Early in the season, oh, maybe he can be, you know, a dark horse, or maybe he can be one of the favorites for the Heisman Trophy. Then he throws one pass, you know, he doesn't throw any passes beyond the middle of the second quarter against Penn State, doesn't have electric numbers in the big games that Michigan wins down the stretch. So now people are down on him. But what are people going to see with J.J. McCarthy when he's on display in a national semifinal game?
Well, they're going to see a guy that doesn't care about numbers, doesn't care about stats. He's just out there to simply win the game. And if the best decision is for him to, you know, throw a bunch of passes to Roman Wilson and Cornelius Johnson, Samaj Morgan, then that's what he's going to do. If the best option for Michigan to win is to hand the ball off to Blake Corum or Donovan Edwards or to you know, be a part of the run game himself, that's exactly what he's going to do. There's not a selfish bone in J.J. McCarthy's body. He's simply because, you guys mentioned it already, he's been to the college football playoffs twice. And Michigan got just demolished by Georgia, as well as everybody back in 21. But he was on that team. He played in that game. Last year, he was the number. He was QB1 throughout the course of the entire season. They went and they lost to a team that most people thought they should beat in TCU. Tough lessons learned, and J.J. doesn't care. He just does not want to have that feeling. He's got that, I hate to lose more than I like to win, and he's had to swallow two losses in the last 2 years.
It's almost like J.J. McCarthy has been more efficient and better than people realize, but like they don't use him enough, and I anticipate them figuring out a way to use that aspect of his game today. But you mentioned, like, obviously the locker room has to come together, the experience level, us against the world. We know that this whole season has been America's team, even though a lot of people like to laugh at Jim Harbaugh saying that kind of thing, considering what the situation is. But how is it, you know, you guys obviously didn't have, like, Instagram and smartphones in 1997, but everybody does today. Every single kid's got access to everything that's being said. How do you block it all out? How does Jim Harbaugh, with, you know, hiring a new agent, Don Yee, there's interest in the NFL. How do you block all of this stuff that they've had to block? How have they done that?
Well, you know, when you come to Michigan, whether you come as a coach or whether you come as a player, you want to have success. And what happens when you have success? You get other individuals, other, you know, teams, franchises that want you. They covet you. And you don't want to come here and be an 8-win team, have some good players, and then, you know, nobody wants you to leave for the NFL early. Nobody's coming after your coach, and you're just kind of humming along, and you do that for 40 or 50 years, and that's how you get 50 years without a national championship. Now, all of a sudden, you know, everybody wants to look from the outside and say, well, what is the concern? Well, you want to have a coach that people covet. You want to have players that teams and franchises that they covet, and that's what Jim Harbaugh has built. And the players have had the experience of getting to the college football playoffs and losing twice, of going through an offseason a couple of times now where, you know, hey, the Minnesota Vikings, the Denver Broncos, they're coming after your coach. They are a resilient bunch. They're tough, and they also understand that even though now, as opposed to 1997, you have basically a supercomputer in your hands. You have access to all that information. You ultimately have control of what you put into your mind. Just like you sit at the table, at training table, you got control over what you put in your body. You've got control over what you put in your mind. And if you don't want to hear those things, then turn the phone off. Turn the notifications off. There's ways to make it happen. And this team controls every little part of their environment, which is why they've been able to overcome some long odds this year.
Ryobi is awesome. Let me tell you why. This Saturday, make cleanup easy with Ryobi 18-volt, 1-plus cordless leaf blower from the Home Depot. We're talking with John Jansen, Michigan radio announcer, who's going to be at the Rose Bowl today as Michigan gets ready to take on Alabama. He's also the host of Stoney and Jansen from 6 to 10 a.m. on 97.1 The Ticket in Detroit. So that puts you in an interesting spot, John, as you join us here on Greeny on ESPN Radio. I'm Gabe Nitz along with Braden Gall. Because, well, you're also talking about, you know, one of the hottest teams in the NFL, the Detroit Lions, and it just so happened one of the biggest storylines in the NFL came out of the Lions and Cowboys game this weekend on Saturday. You spent 10 years as an offensive lineman. What do you think happened with Brad Allen and the Lions in the whole reporting who's eligible, who's not on Saturday night?
Well, I mean, I know Taylor Decker. I know Dan Kim. I know this team extremely well, and even though, you know, Taylor Decker's a Buckeye, I trust him. And when he says he did something, the film backs it up. You don't have to just take their word for it. The film backs it up. He went, Jared Goff looked at him and had a conversation. We don't know what that was, but it's not going to go. He's not going to say, hey, go say hello to the official. He said, go report. Taylor Decker went and reported. And, you know, you've got to look at all of the facts, the guys that are talking about it, and the video, and say, hey, why would the Lions lie about that? Why would Taylor Decker want to take a touchdown off the board? He's run that play before. He's been eligible. He's been, you know, Penei Sewell has done it, a critical first down in last year's, run of at the end of the season. So it's not new to these guys. I have no question that they did what they were supposed to do. And now you're looking at the NFL. And let me ask you this. When was the last time the NFL, whether it was an official or the NFL themselves, in any situation, said, oh, we made a mistake?
We don't want dead air for the next 2.5 hours,
right,
John.
Give me a second, John. I'm sure I can think of one, right? They've had to at least one time.
Well, again, John, just take, you played the position. Like, when you get taught on certain plays, we are talking about a sport where it is you need to take one step 3 inches one direction before going the other direction, and that's what makes the play work, right? There is no chance that the Lions did anything wrong in this situation, because it's all practiced. It's all part of the design of the play.
It's all details. I mean, details make the difference in a team that is 9-8 and misses the playoffs versus a team that's 11-12-13 and 4 that wins their division, wins and is a home field advantage throughout the course of the playoffs. Those teams, Baltimore and San Francisco, they just did it better than everybody else throughout the course of 17 games. Their details, yes, they have really good players, but their details matter. And the biggest difference over the last 3 years for the Detroit Lions, Dan Campbell has said it, in year one, their margin for error, because of their lack of talent and the roster construction, their margin for error was minimal. They made a mistake and it cost them. That margin is grown a little bit, but in the NFL, when you're talking about the number one seed or the number two seed, that margin is very small. And players, when it matters to them, they concentrate on the details. And if it's a 6-inch step, I'm going to make that 6-inch step. I lived it. I breathed it. I know what they're going through. And for anybody to think that Taylor Decker just went up to the official to say hello, or to, I don't even know what the conversation would be, that's the only reason he would be going up to the official.
Real quickly here, John, after the penalty's bad, the result of the play is bad, but you've got to regroup. Do you think the Lions and Dan Campbell should have gone for two once the penalty takes place?
No, I that's where I disagree. I think you kick the extra point at that point. Hey, you say, you know what, let's take this to overtime and let, you know, both defenses were playing well, and yes, CeeDee Lamb was going off, and you don't really ever want to leave it up to a coin toss, but as long as you don't allow a touchdown on that opening drive, you're going to get the ball back, and the Lions offense found something that really worked in those last 2 minutes. I would have kicked the extra point, taken it to overtime, and seen what happened, but you know, it's hard to argue. I mean, that's the thing about Dan Campbell. Whether it's fake punts, which he had one in that game, he loves to gamble. He wants to play the analytics. He wants to play the numbers game. And I disagree, but you know what? That part of that is why they are here right now fighting for that number two seed.
John, we certainly appreciate the time. Enjoy the call today at the Rose Bowl, Michigan and Alabama in the first semifinal game.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me. Happy New Year to everyone.
Happy New Year, John. John Jansen, Michigan radio announcer, host of Stoney and Jansen, 6 to 10 a.m., 97.1 The Ticket. And
it's just so much bad at the end of the Lions-Michigan game.
The Lions-Michigan game.
The Lions and Cowboys. Because it's a bad decision by Mike McCarthy on the previous possession after the interception to throw the ball three times, especially on second down where they take a deep shot, run 2 seconds off the clock and stop it when they could have taken 40-plus seconds off the clock. So it's terrible decision-making by Mike McCarthy and the Cowboys. Then it's terrible officiating on the play that actually works. And then it's probably a terrible decision by the Lions to not kick the extra point once it gets pushed back to the 7-yard line. It's just a whole lot of
bad
football.
A little bit of stubbornness there, which as a stubborn person, as a fellow stubborn person, I can respect from Dan Campbell. We're going for two, damn it. From Super Bowl favorites to potentially one and done in the playoffs, who are we talking about? Well, we're going to talk about them next. Gabe Nutz and Braden Gall in on Greeny, ESPN Radio, and the ESPN app.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Greeny, the podcast.
Greeny, presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive makes bundling easy and affordable. Get a multi-policy discount by combining your motorcycle, RV, boat, ATV, and more. All your protection in one place. Bundle and save at progressive.com.
I have only one question.
Time to play a little one question here on Greeny, ESPN Radio, ESPN app. Gabe Nutz, Braden Gall filling in for Greeny today. We welcome in Evan Wilner, who's going to be asking our questions. Let's go ahead and get to our first question on one question.
Cardinals at Eagles.
Will the Eagles be one and done in the playoffs, Gabe?
I'm going to say no. I know things don't look good for them right now, but as things stand, they end up being the 5 seed. And the 5 seed's kind of where you want to be right now in the NFC if you're not going to have that first-round bye, because you're going to end up playing the NFC South winner, which I think we're going to answer this question later. I don't know how I'm going to answer it because I don't know who's going to win the NFC South, but whoever wins it isn't going to be a very good football team. You're going to be favored even though you're going on the road. I don't think that the Eagles are one and done. I think they at least win that wild card game.
Oh, as of right now, Tampa Bay would be, after that pitiful performance yesterday against New Orleans, they are still technically your 4 seed. They're playing at Carolina. So if Carolina does Carolina things, Tampa Bay wins that game, and I assume they clinch. I agree with you. I think it's as simple as the 5 seed is going on the road to play a very average, literally average football team in the NFL. That's a really good opportunity to get right and win that game, especially if the Eagles play very well against the Giants this weekend in the season finale, which I expect them to do. So, yes, they might be an early exit, but it ain't in the first round. They will win their first round game. So,
I only have one question.
Lions at Cowboys.
Cowboys won this one 2019. We all know what happened at the end. So, which team do you trust more to win in San Francisco if they get to the NFC Championship game? Lions or Cowboys, Gabe?
Oof.
Agreed.
Both these teams are so much better at home, typically, than they've been on the road. And not even just necessarily this year, over the last couple of seasons. I guess I would probably trust Dak a little bit more on the road versus Jared Goff. Like, Jared Goff's home road splits the last 2 years are really, really far apart. So I would say by a lot, but I guess I don't even really trust them just because I have to answer the question. I'll lean towards the Cowboys here.
I guess I'll just take the Lions to be slightly different, but I agree with your assessment. I trust, and here's, I guess, will be my difference, because I agree. I think the rosters are actually very similar.
Yeah.
Like an elite pass rusher, really good defensive pieces, really good weaponry around the quarterback. I think Dak is better than Jared Goff, so I trust the quarterback a little bit better. but I trust the coaching staff and the head coach a lot more for the Lions than I do for the Cowboys. So I'll lean Lions because of the coaching staff, but I agree Dak is maybe the difference maker there. And I honestly, I think the Lions might have a better like 2-53 than the Cowboys by just a tiny margin. They got the tight end now working with Laporta.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I think I might lean Lions because of coaching and overall roster.
I like that thought just because Dan Campbell's going to pull something out that you have. Again, the attempted two-point conversion was so incredibly just creative. He would probably have something for the 49ers up his sleeve that we haven't seen before.
I got to ask him one question.
Packers at Vikings.
Packers get the win on Sunday Night Football, 33-10. What grade do you give Jordan Love this season, Gabe?
Overall, I think you have to give him an A because he's third in passing touchdowns. Like, he's got an opportunity, depending upon what the Cowboys decide to do with Dak and if Brock Purdy sits down, he's got an opportunity to potentially lead the league in touchdown passes in his first year as a starter. I understand things were ugly. Things were really bad in October. There were some bad games. There were some bad moments for Jordan Love. But for him to take over a team that had a lot of turnover, got rid of a lot of veterans from a team that with Aaron Rodgers was 8-9 a year ago, found themselves actually in this exact same position. Beat the Vikings in Week 17 to set up a win and your in-game at Lambeau Field. And that's what they've got this year. Last year it was against the Lions, and they lost with Aaron Rodgers. This year it's against the Bears. Do they win with Jordan Love and go to the playoffs? I don't think many people were thinking Jordan Love would play this well and have this team in the postseason, especially given how bad the defense has played over the last four or five games. This, for me, has to be an A for Jordan Love this season, given everything surrounding him and the change the Packers made.
Yeah, I agree. If you're grading Jordan Love as a first-year starter in the NFL, it's probably an A-. The youngest supporting cast in the entire NFL, the youngest offense in the entire NFL, breaking it. Every receiver is basically a first or second year player. They've had injuries with Christian Watson and Luke Musgrave, and like they've lost players. I think if you're grading him on the grand scheme of NFL quarterbacking, I still think there's a lot of work to be done. He's missed He missed a lot of open receivers against some bad defenses, where he sort of has this thing where he can throw off platform the way the greats do. But that's also when he gets in trouble.
You mean Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, right?
Well, just any of them. And Mahomes. anybody that's great can do it off platform. Especially, I think Mahomes patterned his game after Aaron Rodgers. I think that's where he learned all that stuff from, is watching Rodgers do it. And Love has certainly had a front row seat for the last few years to do that. But it's also where he gets in trouble. You got to hit the out route on 3rd and 6 on the goal line, and he just doesn't set his feet and throw the football. But that's something you work through as a young player. So I think it's sort of like B-minus quarterbacking in the NFL.
Sure.
But I think considering his situation, I think it's absolutely an A.
I have only one question.
Saints at Buccaneers.
All right, the Saints won this one 23-13 to prevent the Bucs from clinching the NFC South. So next week, the Bucs can win the division with a win. The Saints win it with a win and a Bucs loss. And the Falcons can still win it with a win and a Bucs loss. So who will win the NFC South, Gabe?
I'm going to say the Buccaneers just because they play the Panthers. Like, the Panthers are, they're so bad. They are not in a very good spot. Not having a first-round pick this year only just makes it worse for the Panthers. But I think the Buccaneers, while they looked bad and out of sync yesterday, they get it back. They're in the driver's seat. They play the worst team in the NFL, who with a week left has already clinched having the number one overall pick, which again goes to the Chicago Bears, but they've clinched the league's worst record. Buccaneers get it done. Buccaneers are your AFC South champs.
I guess I agree with you again. I think New Orleans is the better team. Clearly yesterday probably showed us that.
Mm-hmm.
Again, look at this Tampa Bay team. They had won 4 straight before yesterday, and no, beating the Panthers and the Falcons and the Packers and the Jaguars is not exactly murderer's row, but offensively they did it. They were very effective with Baker Mayfield. They've got a lot of weapons. I don't see them losing at Carolina, so I think they get off get that bad taste out of their mouth. And again, that still means they would have won 5 out of 6 heading into the playoffs. So that's not bad football. I mean, they're not a great team. They're not even a good team, but I don't know, 5 out of 6 to win the division with Baker Mayfield and all those weapons, I don't see how they lose to Carolina.
I only have one question.
Bengals at Chiefs.
Chiefs win 25-17. They lock up their 8th straight AFC West title. Are the Chiefs still a threat in the AFC game?
Absolutely, yes. And I thought this even before yesterday. As long as you have Patrick Mahomes at quarterback, and as long as Andy Reid is his head coach, I am not going to doubt this team. Now, do they have... That doesn't mean this team doesn't have flaws, because they certainly do. They've got some issues. They've had 40 drops, from the receiving core this year. But the playoffs are where that quarterback makes that much more of a difference. And until Patrick Mahomes is out of the playoffs, they are a threat. I don't care who are his receivers. He has the ability to carry his team. Now, do I think he can carry his team for three straight games? And some of those games being on the road, first time road playoff games ever for him? Yeah, that's going to be tough. It's going to be the toughest road ever that he's had to face. But he's the best quarterback in the league. So they are always dangerous as long as he is healthy.
I don't like going second in this game, Gabe. You took all my stuff because I agree with everything you just said. Literally, is Andy Reid the head coach of the Chiefs? Last I checked, the answer is yes.
Yes, the answer is that is yes.
Is Patrick Mahomes the quarterback of the Chiefs?
Correct.
Yes, last time I checked. And as long as those things are in place, they are a threat. I am scared of them. That is all that needs to be said. Now,
I think of the Green Bay Packers back in 2015. Like they didn't have Jordy Nelson. He had suffered a knee injury, and it was a hodgepodge of wide receivers. And Aaron Rodgers got Jeff Janis 101 yards receiving in a single series in a playoff game against the Arizona Cardinals. The Packers went to a overtime against a Cardinals team they had no business being competitive with.
Yep.
Because Aaron Rodgers was the best quarterback in the NFL in 2015. That's kind of how I feel about this Chiefs team.
Yep.
Are they going to win the Super Bowl? I doubt it, but they're dangerous until they're eliminated.
I think they get more dangerous as time goes by. The longer they survive, the more you believe in them. And so, again, we're talking about a team, if they beat the Chargers this week, an 11-win team, finishing the season with back-to-back wins, they're going to get at least one home playoff game. You win that one, you start to see the momentum building, and that's not a team. If I'm the Dolphins as the 2 seed, I do not want to see Kansas City coming to Miami in divisional round. That is a scary proposition if I'm a Dolphins fan. And then after that, anything could happen. You could actually get a home game after that if other things break your way. So I think they get stronger with time. And as time goes on, if they're still alive, I'm even more terrified of Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs. It's not like they've won multiple MVPs or Super Bowls in the last few years. So you got to be the champ, you got to beat the champ. So
I got to ask him one question.
Patriots at Bills.
All right, the Bills win 27-21, setting up a AFC East championship game, Sunday Night Football, this week in Miami against the Dolphins. The winner obviously wins the East. The Bills, however, could miss the playoffs if they lose and the Steelers win or the Jaguars lose, so the Bills could be the 2 seed or miss the playoffs. Simple question, will the Bills make the playoffs? Braden?
I think they do. This is look, Bradley Chubb's now injured for the Dolphins. Buffalo has played very well against this Miami team. I think Buffalo is on an absolute tear right now. It did not look great yesterday against New England. Josh Allen did not throw the football well, but Belichick has sort of something figured out with that Buffalo offense that nobody else has really figured out. And so I just think Allen is unstoppable. I still think they can lose and still get in, which I know things have to happen, but I don't know. I just think this Buffalo team is really, really dangerous. I think they finish the deal next weekend. I think they win the division. I think they finish as this 2 seed, and I think they're in the playoffs. And I'm very concerned about where Miami's at going into the postseason.
They dominated Miami earlier this year. Granted, that game was in Buffalo, but I don't think it's a great matchup for Miami, especially with some of the injuries that they ended up suffering. So I think Buffalo. And what a wild swing, by the way. Can you imagine being a Bills fan watching that game? Either you're the 2 seed with the potential of having 2 playoff games, maybe even a third one if somebody can upset Baltimore, or you're out of the playoffs. Like, that's just, you're either in a great dominating position or maybe you miss the playoffs. That's going to be a very nerve-wracking game for a lot of Bills fans coming up on Sunday night. Greeny is presented by Progressive Insurance. ESPN Radio has you covered for bowl game action. That includes today. Tune in today for the Cheez-It Citrus Bowl and the Verbo Fiesta Bowl, followed by the college football semifinals at the Rose Bowl and the All-State Sugar Bowl. Coverage begins 12:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Hand off, Milton straight ahead. Touchdown, Georgia. And again, almost untouched. The final score, amazingly, in this Capital One Orange Bowl, Georgia 63, Florida State 3.
It's Greeny on ESPN Radio. Gabe Neitzel, Braden Gall in for Greeny today. Georgia was angry, just angry, and took it all out on Florida State. And understandably so, why they were angry. They were the best team, one of the best teams in college football all season long, only to lose in the SEC championship game. And they pretty much had everybody at their disposal for that game. Florida State, on the other hand, not so much. And they end up getting boat raced by 60, but which is still just a wild thing to say out loud, that you lost a pretty major bowl game by 60 points.
Georgia did not prove anything that it belonged in the playoff because of the points total against Florida State. They belonged in the playoff because through 12 games, 13 games of the regular season, they were clearly one of the four best teams in college football.
Correct.
And if there was a team that deserved to be angry and pissed off that they got left out, it was obviously Georgia. It was obviously Georgia. And I'm not even using the 60-point margin to say told you so. I don't think that's not fair to Florida State. A lot of their players opted out, didn't play in the game, whatever. I don't think that's – but Georgia, like, honestly, if you ask me right now who's the number one team in college football, it's Georgia. I still think Georgia, even – you lose by three to Alabama in one game, and that's why you're not one of the four best teams. I think it's absurd that, like, they're the – that Florida State was the team everyone was upset about. It should have been Georgia. Georgia was the team everyone should have been upset about.
Well, and Georgia was awfully quiet kind of going into that game, where Florida was pounding their chest, right? They were being loud. Oh, if we win this game and finish undefeated, we should be a national champion. And Paul Feinbaum last week – of course, famously of the Paul Feinbaum show. He was on Carlin versus Joe and had this to say about Florida State.
I'm a big fan of comedy. And I remember having a conversation once with a guy who worked, who was Trevor Noah's top writer. And he said, one thing we never do is punch down. So you're asking me to punch down at really the most pathetic, whining, sniveling program in America right now, who can't shut up. I'm not even sure they're going to be able to field a team in the Orange Bowl because everybody, including their backup quarterback, has opted out. But they want to cry about something that's not going to happen. They're not going to be able to claim the national championship because you have to be undefeated, and they'll be lucky if Georgia doesn't beat them by 40.
Well, apparently they weren't lucky because Georgia beat them by 60. And now everybody's wringing their hands, right? Everybody's, oh, man, these bowl games. What are we going to do? NIL, it's just ruining bowl games, Brain. The transfer portal, it's all ruining bowl games. I mean, what are we even doing with these bowl games? Like, everybody's so worried about them, and I just don't understand it. Do bowl games mean what they do now, and especially even next year, once you go to a 12-team playoff, than what they did 25, 30 years ago? Of course not. But that's not a bad thing because the bowl games certainly can still have meaning.
No, bowl games ruined bowl games is what happened. Like the fact that there's 82 teams playing in them. They are fun. They're an exhibition. They're a fun thing to celebrate if you're a fan. Enjoy it if you're at home watching it on TV. It is just for fun. It is absolutely for fun. And there are some other new implications where you can play your backup quarterback and get him ready for next year, which is a great part of the bowl system. But like, think about when we valued bowl games at their peak, probably late 80s, early 90s, right?
Yep.
There was about six really big bowl games. I'm not good at math, Gabe, but how many teams were playing in those five or six big-time bowl games that we all valued for decades as college football fans? How many?
10 to 12.
10 to 12. Oh, so next year, how many teams are going to be playing in the most important games in college football?
Well, I think they're going to 12 teams, aren't they?
I think you nailed it, big guy. So 12 teams is about the six games that were super important in the late 80s, early 90s, before college football became about money and became about all this other stuff, recruiting and the internet and everything else. It was the Cotton Bowl, the Peach Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, the Orange Bowl, the Fiesta Bowl, and the Rose Bowl. There were six really big games and 12 teams playing in them. We're back to that again next year. 12 teams playing in the six and the eight and the you know, all the different rounds of the playoff. That is what we value. The other games are just for fun, and it's okay. It's okay to just enjoy them for what they are. They are fun, entertaining exhibition events that allow you to learn, as coaches have done for decades now, about your young players. These coaches learn about their young players, and they get ready for next year. And that's good for your program. So just enjoy it. Enjoy what it is. the players are out partying wherever they're traveling, unless they're in the Shreveport Independence Bowl or whatever, then there's nothing to do in Shreveport. But, like, otherwise, the players are all out doing...
Taking out Shreveport for no reason on New Year's Day.
Shreveport taking catch of strays. Look, these players are out there to have fun, to enjoy a trip on the holidays. Like, just let them have fun. Like, don't take it too seriously.
The other bowl games almost become minor league baseball on steroids. And here's what I mean by that. Like, nobody necessarily cares who wins, you know, whatever league in AAA or AA. Now it's important to the organization that their players continue to develop. And it's important to, you know, Georgia or Alabama or today Wisconsin and LSU. Like, it's important to them to have those players to continue to develop. Maybe nationally it doesn't matter, but also, you know, whether it's ESPN, you know, ESPN Radio, whoever's televising or putting these games on the radio, also know it has to be an entertaining product. And a lot of times at minor league baseball games, you have wild, wacky things. Mm-hmm. Enter the Pop-Tarts Bowl. I dare you to have more fun watching a college football game than what happened last week with the Pop-Tarts Bowl. And I think we're just going to see, I think other companies are going to see that, and they're going to try to grab onto it and try to replicate what they did. And it's just, it's fun. What else are you going to be doing when you're off the week between Christmas and New Year's? Like, watch these games and just have fun. They don't have to be, oh, the Big Ten was undefeated in bowl games. No, it doesn't have to be that. No, it could just be a game that's on TV that you can sit down and watch because you like football.
Yeah, and guess what? We didn't have a lot of non-conference games in the first 3 weeks of the season in the early 90s. We didn't have a 4-team playoff or a 12-team playoff, so we didn't have a lot of chances for these teams to play each other. So it's all now we do. We have all these other opportunities for non-conference games, so you don't need to worry about the results trying to tell you something greater about the sport. It doesn't matter. Here's the deal. If you do not have a player over 300 pounds score a touchdown, you have to forfeit your bowl game. You have to have a guy who is at least three spins on the scale scoring a touchdown, or else you sacrifice the bowl game. Look, trick plays, go for it on fourth down, punt, trick punts, fake field goals, empty the bag. Have fun in these bowl games and treat them for what they are. It is an exhibition game. And again, if you're a fan base and your team wins or loses, I'm going to let you in on a secret. There is no scientific data that proves you are going to be better the next year because you won your bowl game, or worse the next year because you lost. There is no scientific correlation between the outcome of a bowl game and what's going to happen to your program the next year. There is none.
It is going to be full circle for one college football coach trying to get his school back to the national championship. That's next. Greeny, I'm Gabe Nudge along with Braden Gall on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Greeny, the podcast.
That's right, Texas back in the college football playoff. opportunity for them to play for a national championship if they can defeat number 2 Washington later today in the All-State Sugar Bowl. Of course, listen to that right here on ESPN Radio around 8:45 p.m. Eastern. It's Greeny on ESPN Radio, ESPN App, Sirius XM, Channel 80. I'm Gabe Nudge along with Braden Gall, and you can join our conversation by hitting us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. I feel that this game has almost been ignored in the run-up just because, I mean, Alabama's Alabama, right? Like, they are the brand in college football. Nick Saban, everything that goes into that, especially with Saban and the coaching job that he's done. And you mentioned this earlier, Jalen Milroe and his attempt to make Alabama likable because he's so likable, and all the drama surrounding Michigan. There's not a lot of oxygen left for Texas and Washington, one of two teams who is one of two teams who's undefeated in Washington, and Texas, who probably has the second most impressive win of anybody in college football this year over Alabama. And that was the most impressive win for most of the year until Bama beat Georgia in the SEC championship game. So kind of secretly under the radar, this one has just been almost ignored, but I think it's going to be a really good game later tonight, Brady.
I think we're going to get like a 12-round heavyweight boxing match with these two games, and the first 8 rounds are going to be like nothing but guys hitting each other in the kidneys. when Alabama and Michigan play, it's just going to be body blow, body blow, body blow. And then like the last, that's like the first 8 rounds of the fight, you know? And then I think the four final rounds, like from 9 through 12 tonight when Texas and Washington play, is just going to be haymaker after haymaker after haymaker. Deep shots from both quarterbacks, two secondaries, that's their area of weakness. Two great collections of receivers. They're probably 6 NFL receivers in this game, tight ends and receivers for both Washington and Texas. Two brilliant offensive minds. And then the layers that we don't really get to talk about. Like, this is Texas with a head coach, Steve Sarkisian, who was hired not really by the athletic director, but by the powers that be above the athletic director, who also made the decision to move Texas to the SEC, which is largely a no-brainer. But he's going against his former team. Steve Sarkisian was the coach at Washington. He left Washington. Washington got better. And then he, of course, unceremoniously, you know, let go at USC due to the personal issues. He revives his career at Nick Saban's rehabilitation clinic, won a national championship with Alabama as an OC. Now he's back now. And in three years, this was a Texas program that had 3 straight losing seasons under Charlie Strong. They did not like Tom Herman, and they had a 5-7 season in Steve Sarkisian's first year. And in 3 years, they have not only won their first Big 12 championship since 2009, they are now 1 win away from competing for the national title. And, oh, by the way, they're about to join the SEC, the most powerful league in football. Like, this rejuvenation for Texas is almost unprecedented. It's like Miami in, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, where they went from, like, a laughingstock and a punchline and a joke in the media to being one of the most powerful programs in all of the country. And right now they're set up for sustainable success. Whatever happens tonight, they're set up for success in the future, and it's a huge story moving forward in college football that Texas is truly a powerhouse and relevant again.
And Steve Sarkisian being at the middle of that revival, certainly not only catching your attention, but Paul Feinbaum's attention of the Paul Feinbaum Show. Last week on Carlin versus Joe, had this to say about Steve Sarkisian.
Nick Saban gave him a shot. He brought him on in his analyst room where others have many other famous coaches have been, and Sark was still struggling with his demons, finally got through it. He even left, interestingly, to go to the Falcons for a year or two, and then Saban took him back after Lane Kiffin left to go to Florida Atlantic, and he had an amazing run at Alabama the second time around, and I think at that moment, Saban realized he had the best offensive coordinator in the country, and it wasn't long ago that Texas realized the guy that we all thought was maybe the next great coach 8 or 9 years ago when he was at Washington and Southern Cal really was. And that to me has been the remarkable story of Steve Sarkisian.
You know how hard it's got to be the coach that decides to take the kid who's making $3 million in NIL and has the great last name of Manning and not start him and then be right? Like, there's a lot of pressure that goes into that Texas job, and it just seems like he has pulled all the right levers at all the right times.
And he was, the story goes, he was going to be the head coach in waiting at Alabama, that they to keep him there. That's what they wanted to do, was offer him head coaching waiting at Alabama behind Nick Saban to keep him in Tuscaloosa. They knew what they had. He goes to Texas, and in 3 years, they are one win away from the national championship and moving to the SEC. It is a remarkable story, Steve Sarkisian. And it is going to be a fantastic offensive football game tonight. Can't wait.
Yeah, again, Washington, somehow, despite being one of the two undefeated teams all season long, largely ignored all season long. Oh, are they really that good? I'm going to tell you, if you have not watched a lot of Washington, stay up tonight, watch Michael Penix Jr. and that offense, because the way he just slings it from the pocket, it is wildly entertaining to watch. That'll do it here for Greeny, but we're going to continue. Braden and I keep coming up next on Carlin versus Joe on ESPN Radio.
Texas is back, folks!
Thanks for listening to Greeny the podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN. And also available wherever you get your podcasts.